Jim Brown. Thanks for coming to another CaperCast. This is number 32, and it's the first of the recorded interviews with my new voice recorder taken while on the recent trip to Florida. I must admit that my selfish reason for making the trip was to sail again in my old boat Scrimshaw. Bruce Matlack and I had a wonderful time with the boat, together with his son Charlie, just knocking around in the Keys. But our first stated objective was to pick up on the finish of the Everglades Challenge race. But I think maybe it would be wise for us first to look at the Everglades Challenge itself. So I was able to sit down with Steve Isaac, called Chief in the Water Tribe. He is the originator, the organizer of the Everglades Challenge and several other races around Florida. Actually, the title of race organizer has since been passed to his very able assistant, Paula Martell. And I had the chance to talk with him for a while. I thought I'd share that conversation with you. And as always, my initial interest is in motivation. What is it that causes a guy like Steve Isaac or any of us to become so committed to the water? And he started out by explaining why he had always been interested in expeditions.
Well, I remember one time when I was in, I think I was in junior high school, and one of my teachers came up to me, and I have to say, I wasn't the best student. I wasn't as well behaved as I probably should have been. And this teacher came up to me, and she said, "I think you should read this book. You might like this book." And it sort of changed my life, reading Kon-Tiki. Mm. And that teacher had really good insight into me and helped quite a bit. Anyway, that was kind of where it got started. And then after reading Kon-Tiki, I built several rafts out of local materials, trees, barrels.
How old were you?
I was probably about 10 years old or 12 years, somewhere in that range. I don't remember exactly. But so that got me interested. That's what got me interested first in going out on the water, because I grew up in a Minnesota farming town where there wasn't a lot of water. There was this one little river and a little lake in our town, and that was it. And I paddled down that river on a little boat that I made, a raft, really, after reading Kon-Tiki. Anyway, then I would read about these expeditions, and I really wanted to do that. And one thing led to another, and, you know, I went into service, got married, had kids, had a job, went to school, all that stuff. And so that kind of went by the wayside, but I was still interested. And then I remembered that the Eco Challenge came on TV. Mark Burnett. He now produces lots of TV programs, but back in the 80s or 90s or whenever it was, he came out with the Eco Challenge, which was the first real well-known adventure race that was put on. And I watched that on TV, and I wanted to do it so bad. Mm. He came up with the Eco Challenge. And I thought it was the greatest thing, and I wanted to do it, so I contacted him. And at that time, you had to have four people in your team, and it was going to be $50,000 to go off and do that event. And I thought, oh, you know, wife, kids, career, you know, couldn't do it. So I said, well, you know what? I could just do my own adventure race. So I started to organize an adventure race, start to design one. And at that time in adventure racing, you needed to have climbing, you needed to have mountain biking or mountain running, you needed to have swimming, and you needed to have kayaking or canoeing or something like that. So I was trying to put all that stuff together in Florida, and you had to rent a climbing wall in order to get climbing. It was just getting crazy, and I said, wait a minute. I like to sail. I like to kayak. Why don't I just put on a small boat race, but turn it into an adventure race? You know, not around the buoys, but make it an adventure race, but instead of having climbing and biking and all that, just put it a boat, you know, small boats. So that started the ball rolling, and I the first race I came up with was in 2001. set it up, put the word out there on the internet. That was early in the early days of the internet. I got 20 or 25 people to come to the first event.
So Steve decided to set the course one that had been used before. It goes from the Tampa area down around the southwestern tip of Florida to Key Largo in the Florida Keys. But this is not just a run down around the Gulf of Mexico to get there. It's an endurance race because there are several obligatory check-ins up into the Everglades. It involves navigating very shallow water, and in one case, getting under a narrow bridge that's also very low. One must be able to lower the mast, and in the case of the wide multi-hulls, to be able to narrow the boat. These restrictions really require that the boat be small. Furthermore, it must be dragged into the water by the owner at the start of the race. So these are little boats. They have human power or wind power only, that is, paddle, pedal, or sail. And there are several classes for different types of boats, and whether sailed by a single-hander or with crew. So the contestants range for everything from a single guy in a kayak, paddling only, all the way to a big old beach cat with two guys driving it day and night. But of course the single-handers have to stop and rest at some point, and that means sleeping in the Everglades with the alligators and the mosquitoes, playing the tides to get through shallow water, running with the current, hopefully, and then contending with the open Gulf of Mexico in little open boats. So this fixture definitely qualifies as an endurance race, a challenge. That's why they call it the Everglades Challenge. And it's not the only one. This type of racing is becoming more and more popular. Boats are designed expressly for the course, often built by the owner. It's an extremely interesting aspect of seafaring, and Chief is his water tribe name. All of the guys pick their own handles. And the Water Tribe is an umbrella organization under which a lot of this kind of thing is happening. I think it's the future of sailing.
It was interesting because the first event was kind of like this event. It wasn't quite so much small craft advisors, but it was pretty bad, and the wind was blowing right on the beach. Mm-hmm. And first a couple boats launched, and then a couple more boats launched, and then everybody launched. But only five people made it to the finish that first year. It was very difficult to manage. The way I managed it at that point is, before the race, I went to all these places and I put out the orange box with the log sheet in it, chained it to a tree or whatever, and then we went up to the start, and then we started, and I was the last boat off the beach, and my wife was on the phone. She was the one that was coordinating that. So the idea was that everybody would go into the checkpoint and sign the logbook, and I would be the last boat. I would be last off the beach, and I'd get to the first checkpoint, and I always passed a few boats on the way over. Mm-hmm. So then I would sit at the checkpoint looking at the logbook, making phone calls and stuff. We didn't really have spots then and everything. And when the last person was accounted for, then I would leave checkpoint one and go to checkpoint two. And I did that all the way through, and that was the first event. And it was people liked it. It was successful. And so we did it in 2002. And the real game changer for the race was when we started to get spots.
Oh yeah, spots are these little transponding beacons that are carried by all of the contestants. It allows the race organizers to keep track of where everybody is.
Now, we've had some trouble with spots. They do fail out on the water if you're not real careful, and even if you are careful, they can fail on the water. But they've changed the game entirely. We now have upwards of 100 boats on the beach every year.
Yeah, tell me how did the classes evolve?
Well, one thing I wanted to do is to have very, very few rules. I started out with maybe 10 small rules. You know, the rule for launching, for example, how do you define a small boat? Well, if you look at most round the buoys races, they have classes, and they have very strict rules on how big your sail can be and where it has to be and all this stuff. Yeah. And I mean, it's very, very complicated. You know that.
Yeah. Too complicated.
Yeah, it's extremely complicated. And I didn't want to go that route, so I said, well, I came from a kayaking background. I wanted as few rules as possible. So the rule was you could have one or two people in the boat. That was it. You had to launch from above the high water mark off the beach. You had to drag it off the beach. And the feeling was if it was small enough to drag off the beach with one or two people doing the dragging, no help, that would constitute a small boat. Further, in the first 5 or 6 or so years of the race, the first checkpoint required that you drop the mast.
Yes.
And it required that the beam be within 8 feet. So the big trimarans that had a real wide beam couldn't get under the bridge. So they had to figure. That's how Scissors came up with his scissor boat.
Yeah, Scissors is the name of Randy Smythe's very interesting, very wide trimaran in which he has won the race more than once. He won it this year. The thing has its cross beams pivoting on the main hull so that the whole contraption pantographs to reduce its beam and also for other reasons.
That was to get the beam down so he could get under that bridge. So that was the only thing that defined the size of the boat. Drag it off the beach, mast down, and of course you're on the water when you have to lower that mast. And the width of the boat, you had to get it under the bridge. Now since then we had to move that checkpoint, and the result is that we've got much bigger boats now. You'd be surprised how big a boat you can pull off the beach.
Does it matter to anybody here who actually was first to finish and who was actually...
It only matters. There's only a few people like Alan over there. He's one of them. He's always competitive. He wants to win. But there's a few... Well, look, in the first race, I refused to call it a race. And I was very specific about that. I said, this is not a race. This is a challenge. Anybody who can get to from Tampa Bay to Key Largo in a time limit in any weather has beat their own challenge. And, you know, they're all winners.
That's the word Mead used when he came in yesterday, incidentally. It was challenging.
Yes, exactly. You put two boats side by side in the water, they're racing.
Yeah.
And so that didn't stand up very long. And now some people are racing it, some people are in it for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them decide that.
Okay,
you know. But we do give out, we decided we would give out winning awards
for
those who win their class. And we would give out finisher awards for those who don't win their class, but who come here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard those this morning.
Yes, I'd like to drop in here a little of the commotion that was occurring as the finishers came in and later during the award ceremony. Actually, the finishers straggle in over a period of about 4 days, and the award ceremony is held on that final weekend, about a week after the boats start from Tampa.
And you're right, we have a lot more classes, but really we only have, we have 6 classes. And then within class 5, there's a lot of one designs that we recognize in class 5. Hobie has been so successful in our events that we decided that within class 5 we would have a Hobie AI class and a Hobie TI class and a Hobie CAT class. And then in the mono hull, we have the Core Sound 17 and the Core Sound 20 one design classes in the mono hull section. I would say that in class 5 the Hobie AI and TI are the epitome of a boat that just about anybody can jump in. It's a water tribe boat. In class 4, I give that credit to the Core Sound boat. The Core Sound is a water tribe boat. It'll handle just about any condition, and And that's the way the hobby is.
So before you started this thing up, or did you hear about these the type of racing they're doing in Europe? It's like this, but they call them raids.
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. I decided when I was designing the race not to do a raid style, because to do a raid style, you have to have every checkpoint has to handle all the group. The way we have it now, the checkpoints get kind of crowded sometimes, but they're spread out so we can absorb the traffic over a 2 or 3 day period rather than all at once. Now I am doing I'm designing a raid race in Water Tribe right now, and that's going to be to Cuba.
Hey now, here's another Capercast scoop. All of you serious adventure sailors, get a load of this.
Yeah.
And what that's going to be is the first leg of the Cuba race is going to be the EC leg. It's going to start in Tampa Bay, and it's going to come down here. And then we're going to assemble down here, and in raids fashion, we're going to launch at the same time from here to Key West. And then we're going to collect in Key West, and then we're going to launch as a group to the Dry Tortugas. Then we're going to collect in the Dry Tortugas, launch as a group to Cuba. And then we're going to collect in Cuba.
Where, do you know?
Hemingway Marina. Yeah, that'll be the entry point. We may move from... I haven't designed the Cuba yet. I have to go to Cuba and figure things out. But we're going to go to... You have to go to Hemingway Marina first to clear customs. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we'll probably go to a different holding place until we assemble the group again. And then we're going to go to Miami. Mm. From Miami, we're going up to the Cross Florida Canal.
Oh, really?
And then back up to Port DeSoto.
Wow.
Yeah. All raid style for those people who are doing that. And then the other thing is, in the middle of the channel between Florida, the Dry Tortugas, and Hemingway Marina, we're going to have a very large, like a 46-foot catamaran, right out in the middle. That's going to be a checkpoint.
Oh, and in the Gulf Stream?
Yeah, in the Gulf Stream. They're going to hold their position more or less, you know, like within a mile radius or so. They're going to hold their position, and they'll be out in the Gulf Stream as that group is coming across until the last person passes. Yeah. They will have, in addition to having the catamaran up there, they will have at least two rigid inflatables to use as safety boats, and they'll be able to go out and get people. I could have even three or four, but we're going to have a minimum of two ribs out there.
Well, boy, are you ever really asking for it to put a bunch of little open boats out in the Gulf Stream twice? But I think it's a wonderful challenge.
But kayaks have done that Cuba crossing before. We've got very capable guys here, and one of the requirements is that in order to enter this race, they will have had to finish one or two of my other events.
That's great.
Yeah, we're not going to allow any newbies out there.
That's great. Okay.
And also, I will probably have a special boot camp that they all have to attend.
Yeah.
You know, so that everybody's on the same page with what they have to do and what to expect and all that stuff.
Well, I don't know whether I can help you or not, but I've been to Cuba many times. I was there last year. I speak Spanish. I'm a member of the club there.
Oh, I could definitely use your help.
Oh, boy, I sure hope I can get in on that one. And I'll cover it for you, my loyal listeners, to Jim Brown's Outrigged Capercast. Of course, there's a lot more to be said about the Everglades Challenge and the Water Tribe, a whole new brand of seafaring and lightweight modern vessels, small enough and cheap enough for the ordinary mortal to get in on some real adventure sailing. Let's leave this story there for the time being, and incidentally, you are invited to use the pause button at any point here. This goes on altogether for almost an hour. This material seems to belong together. We can call it a bonus. I hope you enjoy these stories. Go now to some of the banter that went on around this year's finish of the Everglades Challenge. Picture a sleepy little motel right on the overseas highway. directly across from the Napa Auto Parts and behind the Pelican Restaurant in Key Largo. There's a nice sandy beachfront on the quiet gulf, some casual homemade beach furniture, and a gathering crowd of, up to 100 people. And as the finishers straggle in after over 200 miles out in the big blue briny, or maybe sheltering in the world's greatest marsh, they all get a cheer. You know, Meade Goujon is the West System epoxy guy. He and his brother, late brother, have competed in the Everglades Challenge several times. And this race was apparently the worst weather that any of the events have experienced. A lot of boats did not finish. Several came in damaged. And Meade, at age 78, finished well as usual. But not as usual. He came in looking pretty beat up, and he had a story to tell. I tried to record it, but the audio quality is poor because there were just too many people around making noise. So I'll try to paraphrase. He had decided to stop for rest the night before, almost at dark. He crept into some shelter along the Everglades, anchored in shallow water, stood up in his trimaran sailing canoe, and prepared to take his sail down. He reached for the attachment of the main sheet out toward the end of the boom, began to lose his balance, but figured he could step out into shallow water. But in the meantime, the canoe had apparently swung on its anchor into water that was not shallow. He stepped out, went in up to his neck, felt his foul-weather overalls filling with water, and so hastened to climb back in the canoe. He could not reach all the way to the far side to grab the opposite gunwale, so he grabbed his seat. Now, the seat in Meade's canoe is the product of years of development. It's an integral part of his equipment. He grabbed the seat, yanked on it, hoping to drag himself up onto the gunwale, but instead the seat came out, flew over his head, landed in the water out of reach, was really tempted to swim after it, noticed that there was some current, the seat was drifting away. If he had left the boat, he might not be here to tell the story. He very fortunately stayed with the boat, did manage to get back in, spent the next 45 minutes sailing around in the dark trying to find his seat, ended up spending a very uncomfortable night soaking wet in his boat. The next morning, propped himself up somehow with his gear and sailed on to finish the race. Now, there were a couple of seconds there that could have made a big difference. Perhaps a less experienced sailor would have tried to go after the seat, overalls full of water. But he made it in on his own. And there was another contestant that had a real survival story to tell, and he told about it at the award ceremony at the conclusion of the race. I recorded it, but it's another case of technical difficulty. I can't seem to open that file, so I'll just tell you that this guy up and confessed that he did not use good sense. He sailed too hard, too long, without rest, without food. At some point, he became separated from his boat. He doesn't really know what happened, but he was hallucinating, found himself hanging on to mangroves. His boat gone, others in the race rescued him. He received a lot of help. He was very grateful for it, thanked everyone, cautioned everyone about overdoing it when trying to compete in an endurance race. But there was another guy who got up and told his story. A true survival story which I think none of us should forget. It's because of his endurance on the stand-up paddleboard that he has survived to not be one of the average 22 veteran suicides now experienced in the United States daily. His water tribe name is Veteran Voyager.
That name came up because I realized after my 20 years in the military, 15 of that in the special operations community, and then another 8 years contracting before I called it completely quits, that there was a lot of guys like me who got out of the service, and you go off to do wonderful, great things, and you leave with all the injuries, all the wounds, and things start getting real rough, and you feel like you're alone. And, you know, this is why we have a veteran suicide problem today. I did 7 tours between Iraq, Afghanistan, and a little bit of Bosnia back in those days. But I was hospitalized in 2014 for a number of traumatic brain injuries and a PTS. We take the D off of there because it's not a disorder. And at the VA hospital there for about 3 months, one of the rec therapy events is we got on a stand-up paddleboard. And all my balance issues, I've got a fused neck, I've got my ears have been blown, you know, from the IED, and got about 3 eye surgeries. I see double unless I'm wearing the corrective lenses. So if you see me out there on the water and I'm not wearing lenses, watch out, because I'm going to hit one of you. I guarantee I'll hit one of you. So when I got on that paddleboard and everything held still, I mean, it literally was like, and I've been this way for, you know, I've been this way for 10, 15 years with everything. I stood on the water and the horizon went flat like a rock. And you have to understand what that means. That's like being in a prison, a dark dungeon, and coming out and the lights come on. And it was amazing. I was in shock. So I paddled around. I told the docs about it, and they explained to me it's sort of what sailors get sometimes, where the sea legs stay permanent with damage in the cervical spine. So I wanted to, then we figured that out, and I wanted to do something to give back, because I felt like, okay, life's over, I'm on all these meds, you know, what can I do? And I want to get off all the meds. So I said, I'm going to row around the world. It's never been done before. And we've got a plan in 2020. And if you think it can't be done, please come see me and tell me why, so I can, we can figure that one out. But in an ocean rowboat. I need to know. And a friend of mine said, hey, why don't you start with something more down to earth? And I said, okay, I'm going to paddleboard from Texas to New York City. And he said, how about across Lake Okeechobee? And I was like, no, man. I'm a freaking Special Forces Ranger operator. I can do this, you know. I've got to get my life back. So I stopped all the meds. I quit all that junk. I quit the alcohol to self-medicate. And that's when I found, I was looking for answers on the water. And that's when I looked up the Water Tribe. And I thought, these people are as crazy as I am. And I can learn something here. And man, have I ever. You know, and even though I grew up on the water, you know, I was just winging it. You know, and now I learned so much from Chief. And I, like everybody else, hear Chief's voice. Like when I was crossing Charlotte Harbor on a sup 5 days ago, I told Mike, I said, this is when Chief would have said, just wait it out. And he said, you're right. But it's too late. We were 3 hours across.
Incidentally, some of you may like to know that SUP, S-U-P, means stand up paddleboard. And this guy is one of only 2 contestants that has ever completed the Everglades Challenge on a stand up paddleboard.
So I did Operation Phoenix last year, and that was from Corpus Christi, Texas to New York City. It was 2,629 miles. We raised $220,000 for the Task Force Dagger Foundation, which was there. Which was there for me and in my darkest hour. And the bigger part of that is they were there to help take care of my family and my incredible wife, Tanya, who, by the way, did the lion's share of the work for Operation Phoenix. She followed me around in an RV, so we didn't have to find a hotel, or I didn't have to camp all the time. If I was nice, she'd pick me up, and that was good marriage counseling. So this journey continues. You know, that I think one day maybe we'll do the row. You know, and Tiny just tell me every day we're not. But this journey continues with Operation Torrent. And a torrent is an overwhelming flood of emotion or of water, or, you know, a deluge. And that's what happens to guys who, whether it's traumatic brain injury or PTS, and then all the events of life after they no longer have a mission and are doing something bigger than themselves, this torrent is can't be overcome. And so they figured it's time to end it. So my mission is to show you don't have to do that. And even if it's as simple as on a stand-up paddleboard, you can find a new mission. And so they're filming a documentary about it. the culminating event, well, this was part of the train up, and I had a great time with the weather, because again, we got to experience some really, really bad stuff. I did a 24-hour stint. I don't know how far it is from Chokoloski to Flamingo, but the world record is only 81 miles, so I don't know if it came close or not. But so we got a lot of great training events for that. I'm going to do the Minnesota and the Blackbeard again, and then the R2AK 2018, and that's 750 miles, and we're doing it on paddleboard. So right now, you can follow what we're doing on VeteranVoice360.com. I feel like that I have found a family of kindred spirits. You guys are an inspiration to me. This whole group, Chief is, what he's done here, and I'm going forward, and I will always represent the Water Tribe, you know, and everything I do, you know, especially with some of these bigger events coming up. Thank you. Thanks for.